Welcome to a new episode of the India Independent Films Podcast. This is Rahul Desai here, a film critic for Film Companion. I have with me a friend and the main critic, Uday Bhatia. We are back. And it's a double bill today. We are going to be discussing two films, two very different films. The first one is a Hindi film, Sudhir Mishra's new film called Afwa. And the second one is the 195th film in the Marvel franchise, The Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which might sound surprising right now. But we have a lot to talk about. So let's start with Afwa. As I said, Sudhir Mishra's new film starring Nawazuddin and Bhumi Pednekar and Sumit Vyas. It had a very limited release. It's playing in very few cinemas across the country. We struggled to find shows. Luckily, Bombay had a couple of press shows that we could watch it in. Uday watched it yesterday. It's a very interesting film. And Uday, why don't you few lines about the film before we get into it?
Okay, so it's set in this town called Sawalpur in Rajasthan, it starts off with this riot, which is engineered by this person called Vicky Singh, whom everyone calls Vicky Banna, who is the leader in a party called the Rashtra Vikas Dal Party, which has formed an alliance with a national party that is very clearly the BJP. And we see a rally go through a Muslim area, and a riot is kind of engineered out there by Vicky Banna's people. And one of his goons, Chandan, who's played by Sharib Hashmi, kills behind, he pulls down the shutter and he kills a butcher out there, a Muslim man. And that part of that is captured on camera, and it becomes a huge issue, which leads Vicky's wife, played by Bhumi Pednekar, to get mad at him. And in that process, she runs away from home. And coincidentally, she meets this ad person played by Nawazuddin Siddiqui named Rahab, who has come back from the States and is on his way to what looks like the Jaipur Lit Fest. It's called something else. And they kind of end up together over the course of one night, running away from Vicky Banna's goons. And it's another over the course of one night film from Sudhir Mishra after Is Raat Ki Subah Nahi. And there is some kind of tragic circularity in that Is Raat Ki Subah Nahi, when it released, it did, like, it barely released. Like, it may have run for like 2 days. So everyone who saw it on reruns on TV later, where it became kind of a cult film. And Afwa, I don't know if it's headed towards that kind of status, but it certainly, as you mentioned, has not got many shows. And Sudhir Mishra tried to get people to see it and perhaps took some steps that he shouldn't have, which we'll, I guess, come to later.
Those steps that he shouldn't have are amusing also. Basically the title of the film, as you may have guessed, which translates to rumor, is more or less the theme of the film, because this little journey over the course of one night that Uday just talked about, which has basically a Muslim man, Rahab, who is obviously returned from New York, armchair activist of sorts, wants to do good, has TED talks, is, you know, is a common sort of urban bullshitter, and Bhumi Pednekar's character Nivedita, a Hindu woman, are on the run, and their sort of escape is reframed by the IT cell as love jihad on social media, on Twitter, and it catches fire, and that's entirely sort of planned by the politician character Sumit Vyas's Vicky Bana, that's pretty much the gist of the film. And as Uday said again, you know, it's not a very it's quite a thinly veiled sort of nod to what's happening in the country and the BJP and sort of Sumit Vyas's character as a youth leader, probably a future prime minister of sorts, the way he's married into a political family as well, and has married a political heiress who's run away from him because she finds him to be too bigoted for her sensibilities. So very sort of very interesting staging, and you know, as you said, it, I mean, hardly any, do you think this Afwa, given the sort of response it's got in the last in the last week or so, in the last 5 days or so, just like Is Raat Ki Subah Nahi, basically, do you think it's going to become that sort of cult film over the years? Because even that's the first thing that came to my mind, because Sudhir Mishra's films more often than not have the same trajectory. They go down in history. And even though his previous film, I think, was a Netflix film, Serious Man. I'm wondering if Afwa, by virtue of sort of releasing so limitedly, and because of that also being in the news, because it's also released in the same week as a diametrically opposite film called Kerala Stories, which we won't talk about, but you get the gist. It's just another sort of Kashmir file, sort of propaganda, right wing nonsense. So, given that it released in the same week, do you think this has that sort of mileage to become that kind of very typical Sudhir Mishra cult film?
For a couple of reasons, I wonder whether that might be the case. One, Is Raat Ki Subah Nahi was kind of, it was slightly ahead of its time in the way that it kind of approached the gangster film. For that time, we weren't kind of used to seeing quote-unquote villains being drawn up with so much love, like with so much personality. Usually the personality is given to everyone on the side of the hero, and the villains are kind of, you know, masked into this one thing, or at least only the head is given something, whereas here, like, each of the henchmen is given like a very specific personality and like a chance to shine, which is something that you see very much in Afwa also, which we'll come to. And Israt kind of felt a little bit like new for that time. Afwa is not behind the times, but it's very much off the times, I would say, like very much like commenting on exactly this moment. I don't know if it has in it, you know, enough in it to kind of break through as in the way that Israt did later on. I mean, Israt is still, I mean, we talk about it as a cult film, whatever, important film, but it's actually like still fairly unknown amongst most people. It's just like a very intense small group that still keeps talking about it. The other thing is that, you know, I mean, I feel like, and we've done it on this podcast also, where we've said that, you know, oh, this film, it released in the halls, but, you know, wait till it comes on streaming and it's going to kind of do something out there and stuff. That hasn't quite happened really, I think, for films yet. Like, I'm missing some example, but a film that didn't do great on its theatrical release, but then really exploded on streaming, I can't think of many examples of that right now. We thought that Action Hero would really kill when it came to streaming, and I don't know if that really happened. I mean, said that for RKR versus RK, which didn't come to screaming at all. So, but yeah, I don't quite know if it'll land up there.
I mean, it would have really helped if Afa's direct to streaming sort of film. But again, you can totally imagine why not a lot of streamers might have really wanted to anything to do with this film.
No, for sure. I don't know if we'll see it, frankly, online anytime soon.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I feel like, and that's a good point, actually, because none of the Action Hero is a good example. And, you know, a couple of others during the pandemic, I won't really count because, I mean, something like Badhai Do, which had anyways, by virtue of releasing during the pandemic or in between lockdowns, had a limited sort of running release and then sort of really not exploded but did pretty well within, you know, the social media circuit and the internet in general. But
that would probably be the closest example for something that got quite buzzy, like when it released. I mean, yeah, it was, people were appreciating it even in theaters, but yeah, when it came online, there was a second wave for that film. You're right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And that was, but again, that was again the sort of theatrical was stunted by the pandemic. So it's not really organic in that sense that the film didn't do well in theaters, but did well on online. I don't think that was the case. I think it got fair amount of critical acclaim when it released in theaters as well. But yeah, I don't think anyways Afa, as you said, might drop on a streamer anytime soon. We'll talk about the reasons also, because as both of you and I might have noticed, and a lot of others too who watched the film and reviewed it, it's not a very subtle film, right? It's if anything, it's almost in the language of the kind of cinema that we see on the opposite side. Like it's really an indictment of what's happening in the country, sure, but it's very almost campy in how the plot is constructed, because there are a bunch of sub-threads there. We are talking about Chandan Singh, Shahrukh Hashmi's character also on the run because he's supposed to be assassinated. He's supposed to be eliminated by his political party for being sort of a loose cannon of sorts. There's also another thread between a corrupt cop and his sub-inspector. Both of them are having an affair. And she is sort of keeping a track on him, and he's been sort of almost Vicky Singh's sort of second, his right-hand man, who's been told to eliminate the Shahrukh Hashmi character. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and you see the film sort of barreling towards a very, very, almost, I mean, almost a parody of a climax. I don't know if it was satirical or if it was intentional, but a lot of it happening.
The ending was so bad. Oh, God, that was horrible. You're laughing. It's just...
yeah, the Jaipur Lit Fest ending, basically, where even the elites aren't spared, really. And everyone becomes a caricature by then. There's no real... there's no real attempt to be... nuanced or to be sly about its messaging, because it's very clearly almost angry in its indictment of the BJP, of the atmosphere of hatred, that of the divisive politics. And we see very specific plot devices used, like the IT cell sort of existing in a very funny manner, where a bunch of almost college kids sort of doing all the social media viral video thing. And you know, the Vicky Singh character in general, sort of him taking over towards the end, driving a truck. It's all very on the nose. It's all very campy. It's almost like Sudhir Mishra might have decided, saying there is no point really being too subtle anymore, because the people then it's supposed to reach won't really get it, or they aren't smart enough to get it. So yeah. I guess that's probably one of the reasons. And even you said, and I even read your tweet where, you know, you mentioned rightly that Nawazuddin Siddiqui's performance is also pretty weird and strange and bad almost.
It's weird. I mean, it's so strange, right? Like there was, I was watching it with someone, and He was saying that it was almost like, you know, the brief was given to Nawaz to play it like a comedy and to everyone else to play it like this sort of tense thriller. And it really does work like that, but it doesn't work, as in it just, he's playing this sort of US return suave person, naive kind of guy who doesn't realize ground politics and all. And it seems like miscasting, and then B, it just seems like a performance that is very out of sync with the rest of the film.
It's almost like he's spoofing that sort of character, right? Like, you're right about it not working. And my one way of rationalizing the brief given to him or the way he performed it was that be that serious man character where you're basically almost trolling the character you're playing or being snarky. It felt like a Manu Joseph character, basically. It felt like Nawaz was playing an iteration of a typical NRI who's returned home with like stars in his eyes and this whole thing about, and you know, his English speaking, I could not come to terms with either. And I felt like there was some design to it, except that it didn't really work, because you're right about the dissonance between the palette and between what Nawaz is doing, because everyone else is dead serious. Bhumi Pednekar is almost crying most of the film, or she's very urgent. The Share Bashmi character also is like really urgent. So it is very jarring to see Nawaz play it a certain way where he's sort of playing it very snarkily. And I wonder if I even wrote in the review, I wonder if that tone is sort of a reflection of Sudhir Mishra's perspective towards what he's talking about here, because I felt like the film wanted to be snarky but eventually might have almost ended up falling in its own trap. But you know, because it's the sort of film where its courage will be misinterpreted as, you know, as greatness or as a good film, and it's gotten a lot of sort of reactions from people who watched it, the few people who watched it online, and most of them seem to have liked it. And I'd say overall I quite liked it, because I see what Sudhir Mishra is trying to do, or I see the very jarring sort of plotting that's happening, and I'm even willing to forgive that. But I don't want to make the mistake of saying that just because it's a miracle that this film even exists in theaters, or that it's brave, or that it's past the censors and without any major cuts, or that it's not eliciting the sort of controversy a film like this might have otherwise from the right wing. I don't want to say that is merit enough to call it a great film.
Yeah, it's. I think it just has a lot of generally inconsistent moments for it to be a great film. But I think, as you mentioned, also this sort of smugness of tone and the blatantness of it also is a strength, in the sense that it's like, you know, these are not subtle times. And sometimes it just, you know, you need a film that just like goes for it and doesn't wrap it up in metaphors and sort of try and make it. We've had a lot of films that sort of half-heartedly go at stuff and they've just been a mess. Almost Pyar with DJ Mohabbat was an example, which also had, you know, tried to comment on the times, and it just kind of missed like by miles, because it was just such a weird story, and it it didn't have any focus. It didn't know where to go, whereas this is like crazily focused. And it's also kind of almost matter of fact about it, in the sense that it shows everything, but it's not even like sort of dwelling on stuff. It's not, you know, people are murdered. You know, there's accusations of love jihad, and there's almost lynchings, and there's shootings and stuff like that. And the film just goes on. It's not like, you know, it stops and like there's like sad music being played after the butcher is murdered at the start or something. It's just another day in India, And the film isn't kind of, I think because it's not pretending to be aghast or surprised at stuff like that, that it finds a, I think, a tone appropriate for the times that this has become so commonplace that we are like, oh yeah, you know, someone gets murdered in the name of religion and no one even bats an eye.
Yeah, because that's exactly, I mean, how, even though I was almost laughing at the last 15 or 20 minutes of the film, and when I came out, I was like, oh God, that was a joke in the end. And I also realized that, as you said, you know, and I found myself thinking about it while writing the review as well. It's probably a reflection of the times we're in, given that even reality is a farce nowadays, and that the film descends into that sort of farce by the end, where there's this drama outside a lit fest fort, and where you know, everyone's being a hypocrite, and where there's a truck, and where there's a video going viral right at the last moment. I mean, as much as you'd like to call it very contrived and bizarre, I wouldn't be surprised to read it in the newspaper tomorrow, online tomorrow, that something exactly like this might have happened in some corner of the country, and we just sort of went by it. We just read about it, laughed about it, maybe shared it with each other on WhatsApp or talked about it for 2 minutes and let it go, because that's the kind of news we've been used to for the last couple of years at least. And the fact that Afwa is smug about it, or is almost matter of fact about it, or refuses to be serious because it almost like it has too much information within it to be subtle, I felt like that eventually might have worked if you sort of zoom out and look at the film from a distance and not get into the specifics of the plotting, which at best is pretty average and which at best is very Bollywoodish. You can also say that it's also very much a real world film, because that's what seems to be happening everywhere. And who's to say what is fiction and what is made up and what is reality, or what is rumor and what is real? And I guess that's something that I'd give to the film, and, you know, credit to it for sort of sticking to its guns at the risk of falling like a pack of cards, which it almost does towards the end. But if you really want to think about it, that's what's been happening anyway.
Yeah, it also helps that Mishra's, whatever, whether he's making good films, bad films, flawed films, he's always been a good director of actors. And Nawaz aside, and, you know, you would think that that's a big deal, but this is actually a film that makes a lot of space for performances that are not the lead performances, quote unquote. And I thought all the other actors do, you know, a fairly good job. Some of them do a great job. I don't know the name of the actor, unfortunately, but the guy who plays like the balding goon, who's like... Yeah. Vicky Banna's lieutenant, he's really good, that guy. I don't know, have you seen him somewhere?
No, I haven't seen him somewhere, but you're right, it's a very striking character and very striking performance, because
he just has a good face. I mean, that he doesn't do much, doesn't say much, but he had a presence. I like the crying, the VP goon also, the one who almost shoots Nivi. I thought he was pretty good. Bhumi Pednekar is not bad, though she has to cry a lot, and it's a strange, slightly strange role. I'm not sure if Sudhir Mishra knew whether he was impressed by Nivi, or whether he wanted to kind of mock her in the way that Rahab is being mocked lightly also, but she kind of exists somewhere between that, I think. And I thought the cops were pretty good too. The actor playing Tomer and his subordinate's really good, the one whom he's having an affair with.
You're right. I mean, it's mostly sort of an ensemble film in that sense, and I really like Sare Bashmi as well. It's nice that he's sort of getting the kind of roles that make an impact and something like this. And yeah, of course, the peripheral faces in this film, they are more or less what sort of shape the environment. And Nawaz's performance aside, I found Bhumi's character a little strange, in the sense that it didn't feel like she belonged to that family, or it felt like too obvious a surrogate for being a liberal sort of millennial who's sort of grown up around JNU or social media and knows what is bigotry and what is not. It almost felt like she was planted in a way to make it a little more easy for the opposites to exist in the film, for the contrast to sort of thrive in the film. So in that sense, it was, you know, and because given that her father was the founder of the party or whatever, and they've been a right-wing party for the longest time, given that she's grown up in that household, been sent to probably Delhi to study, found it a little weird that she was so against her fiancé right from the beginning. And when how did she not see it before that, or how did she sort of grow her own personality of sorts in that house? But yeah,
did he remind you of Anurag Thakur, the fiance?
Good point. He might have.
Actually. I thought he was styled after him because, yeah, you know, outwardly kind of like suave and seems like a, you know, quote unquote, educated young man, you know, with progressive ideas, but then, you know, a bigot like the rest of them.
an absolute goon deep inside. And I really like how he plays these characters, though. I like
Sumit Vyas.
Yeah, I like Sumit Vyas as an actor. I mean, there's something about him where he can play negative characters with some sort of edge, or which has this sort of Vijay Verma type of edginess to it. And I think he does a very good job in this film as well, because he's not one. I mean, you know, the duality exists, and whenever you see the other side, you're right. You know, it's the real life inspiration is pretty obvious now that you think about it. But yeah, and that also goes to say how not subtle Sudhir Mishra is about the whole thing. And at the same time, I think it's a good time to talk about what he's been doing to promote the film right now.
Oh, man. Did you I'm not sure of the sequence of events really, but I think it started off with him kind of saying that liberal audiences complain about whatever Kashmir Files and films like that, but they don't go and see, you know, the kind of films that are geared towards them, which was like 2 weeks before his film released, I think. And I think then Vivek Agnihotri responded to one of his tweets and said that, you know, I will debate you in any forum, anywhere. And Sudhir Mishra, instead of saying I don't talk to fascists, said that yes, of course we should talk. And then apparently they had a conversation, which obviously I have not watched because, you know, have a job and stuff, but it exists somewhere, I think.
Yeah, it does. And that, you know, honestly, like, and this is exactly the sequence of events, and that video exists. They did have some kind of debate somewhere. But the fact that Sudhir Mishra did all that and then said, you know, I'm open to conversation, I'm open to all kinds of discourse, that's also the main problem with liberals, right, in the country, or quote-unquote liberals in the country, because you want to be different from, you know, the right wing, the bigots. You want to be like, oh, I'm wise, I'm going to have a conversation, I'm open to everything, film should not be banned, this should not be, everything should be made, we are good people, and we want to see everyone coexist in a healthy sort of environment of debate and disagreements. But what a lot of people like Sudhir Mishra may not get, or even, I'd put Hansel Mehta also there in that category. And I feel like it's self-defeating after a while, because they are reiterating exactly what the fascist like Vivek Agnihotri and the Kerala Stories makers, or what exactly what they want, because it's really, there is no reasoning, there is no sanity to the way they operate, and then pretending to be sane in all this chaos is really playing into their hands, and it is just
it's just handing them a mic and allowing them to spew nonsense. What do you expect? I mean, go and debate the center at least. Like, what are you doing debating Vivek Agnihotri, who's never put a coherent thought together ever? It's self-defeating. But I think Sudhir Mishra is kind of, he comes from a generation that perhaps, I don't know, didn't think this way, or doesn't understand exactly how social media works also now, and how things are disseminated and how people are, you know, to be sure, I think people are making clips of whatever nonsense Agnihotri is saying and sending it on WhatsApp, which is almost like a parody of what is happening, considering that his film is sort of about that, and the Nawaz character, who's been like, yeah, you know, oh, we should, you know, is like this sort of soft liberal that he himself became in this whole process. But his film shows that that doesn't work at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's a bit weird to see, but yeah, I've totally ignored that side of Afwa's legacy so far. And of course, you know, it's nice that Sudhir Mishra is still making the kind of films he wants to. Sure, that's a good thing. He's expressing himself very obviously, and you know, he's right out there with his thoughts, which is which is always a good thing. You know, whether this film sort of what it does over the coming months or years and all, I don't think, I mean, we are equipped to really predict, but yeah, it's definitely the sort of film that I found more coherent and effective than something like Anubhav Sinha might make, like Anek, for example. Yeah. Even though his Bheed was far more coherent than Anek, I felt it had its issues also, and I feel like he always doesn't know whether to be sly, subtle, or blatant, and also whether to be smug about it. So it's a bunch of things going on with Anubhav Sinha, who's also one of the producers of this film. So, you know, props to him for at least backing a better filmmaker. So then,
and also just like a, you know, if I don't know if it's, if we're getting through this thing, you know, through this conversation to people who haven't seen it, but Afwa is actually quite a bit of fun. It's a gripping film. It's not like Vegetables. Like, you don't, it's not a bunch of lectures. It's actually like a good solid thriller, and there's a lot of humor in it in between, and it's not a difficult film to, I mean, it's a bit of a harrowing film to watch given like what the country is, but frankly, you know, if you watch the news, you can watch this film and it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, it doesn't lose you at any point, which is great, even though, you know, the Nawaz character goes on his little monologues and very preachy scenes with Bhumi, but you can forgive all that, because at the end of the day, it's a genre, it's almost a genre thriller where you're just basically escaping the bad guys and it's a race against time. So yeah, I mean, it's a fair amount of fun, and even if you look at the camp towards the end, as all the farce towards the end as a bit of satire, it might just help the lens through which we view this film. So yeah, I guess if you don't catch the film, I can't say it's going to be out on streaming anytime soon, but do read about it and you know, keep your eye out for any sort of screenings. That's as far as Afwa is concerned, Sudhir Mishra's latest. We will move on to happier and glossier arena, where Guardians of the Galaxy, me talking about a Marvel film, the third Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn's franchise, basically. Not the 195th, but close 32nd film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Allegedly, the end of an era as far as this gang is concerned. It released last week, and And honestly, this is the only franchise I've really consistently enjoyed over the three films, over the 9 years that it's sort of come out. I don't think it's overstayed its welcome or anything, yeah. Though I'm not a big fan of everything being interconnected and us having to know what's happened in the Avengers films to know the continuity of the characters in this film, but it's okay. Wikipedia is always around.
Rahul, in celebration of you watching a Marvel movie, your once a year Marvel movie watch, why don't you give us a little bit of idea about what happens?
That's the worst thing ever. Yeah, okay. I'll give it a go. As I said, third film in the Guardians of the Galaxy, as widely publicized, this is probably the last Guardians of the Galaxy film as we know them, at least this gang. It is more or less a continuation of what's been happening in the MCU. I'm not going to get into specifics more because I don't give a shit, but also because the Guardians of the Galaxy also stands alone in my head as its own little self-serving universe. This film basically more or less opens in Nowhere, which is the little planet that they are building for themselves, a home they can call their own, where the Guardians are all sort of coming to terms with a new kind of life, where our protagonist, who's played by Chris Pratt, Peter Quill, the Star-Lord, basically is in depression because, as we know, Gamora died in one of the Avengers films and in Endgame or Infinity War. No, Infinity War. And there's a different version of Gamora now from the past, but it's more or less he's gone through a breakup. There's a superhero version of a breakup where he's drinking himself to death. And everyone else is trying to support him. Drax and Mantis and Groot and Rocket. And there's a sudden attack at the beginning of the film by Adam Warlock, who's basically a sovereign sent by what do we call the villain here? The High Evolutionary. Who's basically, I love that I'm sort of rattling off these names like I've been following it very.
I'm very much enjoying your plot summary. This is you putting the plot summary on me like for years now.
Yeah, well, okay. To cut it short, basically, there's an attack on the planet. they're caught, they're blindsided by it. Rocket is wounded, our little raccoon, our friendly little Bradley Cooperish raccoon. And he is mortally wounded. He's going to die. And while he's in a coma of sorts, the other Guardians have to figure out a way to rescue him, which means penetrating the High Evolutionary's villain evil lab in the same galaxy and trying to get some sort of weird technical sort of code to sort of reverse the death switch on him, which is basically a way of saying that they have to rescue Rocket and they have to go into the villain's lair for that. High Evolutionary, for me, one of the better villains in the Marvel franchise. I quite liked him. Evil scientist, basically, more or less. And what came as a surprise to me in this film, or not so much of a surprise also, is that Rocket is more or less the protagonist, because we see basically the origin story of Rocket in this film through flashbacks while he's dying in the present, or while he's sort of wounded in the present. We see how Rocket came into being, why he's a genetically engineered raccoon, and his flashbacks in this lab of the High Evolutionary when he was just an animal, and how failed experiment of sorts came into being. I found it to be, I found myself tearing up quite a bit during this flashback. They were very corny and I had no business to really find it that emotional. But I don't know if James Gunn has a way of putting it together, he manages to craft a sort of goodbye in a very, without really compromising on the essence of the franchise, which is this basically bunch of misfit friends who are figuring out a way forward in life, which I found quite nice. And I like that Rocket was the sort of focus of this film. And I like that the other sort of Guardians had to revolve around his rescue first, and then save the planet as we know it. And for me, that was a good decision to make, even because it's sort of a passing of baton of sorts, because it is implied that, you know, Rocket might take the franchise forward in the future whenever that happens. But I quite like the way James Gunn and his writers sort of handle this baton passing, this sort of easing into the next, whatever you call it, of Marvel, with this kind of film. Because I mean, I'm fairly up to date about how the Guardians have evolved over a period of time, but I'd say this was my favorite Guardians film, because it is a standalone film, and it is also at the same time very much an integral part of the MCU.
I agree, and I'm glad that they kind of, as in, I agree on how James Gunn just manages to, you know, take these situations that on paper seem very much like anything else that's happening in other superhero films, and he wrings something emotional out of them, and he does that in anything that he's directing, pretty much. I've been a fairly recent convert to this series that he made called Peacemaker with John Cena, which I thought was really fun. And it's almost like an R-rated Guardians, this group of misfits coming together. I like that series, and it wasn't my favorite Guardians film. I think the first and the second I still liked it a little better, but it is a nice goodbye, and this really is the only sub franchise that I think I'm actively like I really do enjoy within the MCU. I think the others I can take or leave them, but this one is I like these characters. It's not really what is happening in the films as much. I just like to see them together, and it's just a lot of fun seeing them hang out. And that's something that's, you know, that's unique to the Guardians films, I think, because the other superheroes, the Marvel ones, I found that, like, if you put them in a, you know, if you put them in a normal setting, minus their, you know, their work as superheroes, the scenes are terrible. They're unwatchable, because the writers have no idea, you know, what they would talk about, because they don't have, you know, they don't exist outside of this, outside of the fact that they are superheroes, for me. But I think out here with the Guardians, I think you can just see them, like you can see how they would be in their normal lives through the way that they just talk and keep arguing with each other. And I like that about these films. So yeah, I thought this was quite a nice emotional goodbye. And I like that there's very little connect to the rest of the MCU and whatever has happened or whatever is happening in the other films through this film. Like, there are no cameos by other MCU dignitaries and stuff like that, and just few mentions of Thanos, but that's about it. Which I think was the way to go, because this has become quite a large bunch of characters now, as in they've added, like, you know, quite a few other secondary characters and stuff, and it's nice to just hang out with these guys, I think. Tonally, it gets fairly dark, I would say, with the animal experiments. It's interesting. What did you make of those? Because those are slightly nightmarish images, which is not unusual for James Gunn, though he doesn't tend to make it like a, you know, as grisly, but you know, yeah, you can see why he would go there.
Yeah, I mean, he really went for it, because I just looked at it as sort of an anti-war film, where the flashbacks of sort of prisoners being held together and bonding in that darkness, and then because of that being shaped by the trauma of their flashbacks, which is a very unusual thing to do in a Guardians universe. But at the same time, as you said, it's been fun hanging out with them. So this was a nice little grisly reminder of the fact that even they come from some sort of seriousness or some sort of gravitas. And because it's a very easy to sort of, one way to look at it is like the Guardians are like teenagers who are fun to watch hanging out with each other, because it's more genuine, and it's more their sort of banter is more, feels more genuine because they feel just younger and they are like nostalgia while it's happening. But and the other Marvel characters feel like adults who have just been put together to save the universe, and their banter is very, very sort of formulaic in that way. So I felt like there's more innocence to the Guardians universe, and it feels more organic. And I think this Rocket flashback and this darkness that you talk about, I feel like is a nice little jolt to our senses of how we perceive this universe. And it's a reminder of, you know, where it might be heading and how, whether we like it or not, everyone sort of grows up in a way. That's how I at least was looking at it, because I like the fact that the Guardians film, the last Guardians film, which is this one, sort of exists because the goodbye exists because they probably more or less want to move on, not because of forces beyond their control, and they basically go on their own terms, which is a nice thing, which is very much like going from one stage of life to another. And I've always got this feeling from the Guardians universe, where it just feels like they will disband eventually because they will grow out of this phase of life. And I think the fact that they show Rocket's previous phase of life, where he actually went through a sort of tragedy, and the animal experience they're talking about, he made childhood friends, lost them. I felt like that pretty much reiterates that entire sort of stage-wise phase of life theme that I think Guardians has maybe subconsciously been sort of tapping into over their three films. And that's why I'm saying that even though there's no such thing as a perfect goodbye, but it gets the right balance of emotions and sort of seriousness in a way, because I wouldn't have thought of, I mean, I wouldn't have expected it to sort of revolve around this one character, and then through that sort of show the other characters willing to move on in their own ways. That's why I found even that little sub-thread of Peter Quill and Gamora quite nicely done, because, you know, there are so many terrible ways to bring back a dead character. I'd say this wasn't that terrible, and I'd say this was a nice little reflection of how even superheroes find it difficult to move on from heartbreak. And you saw that in the Star-Lord sort of, even though it was done in a very typically Chris Pratt way, I thought it was a nice little acknowledgement that they aren't willing to bring back that love story. They're just basically showing two lovers who might have probably moved on from each other and grown up, and that's a nice thing. Like they aren't promising anything different, and they are newer people now, and he's not been able to get over her, but she is just a different person, which is a nice which is a very adult thing to say in a franchise like this. And there are a lot of adult things in this film. And I guess that's why I liked it a little more than the previous two films, because that was more or less, you knew they were franchise films. You knew they were the first film and the sequel. You knew they were building on a different universe. But this one is very individualistic in a way, which I liked. And of course, it always helps that James Gunn does those emotions really well in this otherworldly sort of way. And and even the entire conflict of this villain going wrong with his experiments to create the perfect world and therefore willing to start all over again, I thought very nicely biblical in a way, where, you know, Guardians sort of step in to save not just the humans, but the animals. So it's nice little touches everywhere. And I think this film more or less worked for me just as much as Black Panther's second film did. And the way they made do with circumstances beyond their control. I like both of those sort of follow-ups, and I'm very happy with these two Marvel films in particular in the last couple of years.
It actually makes an interesting contrast for me with a film that I saw recently, Mani Ratnam's sequel to Ponniyin Selvan, PS2. And I like that. I like the film. But I also found it so dedicated for reasons that it had to be, but, you know, still dedicated to getting the story told, that like there literally is not a second where something you know, integral to the plot is happening in PS2, and it's so wrapped up in that it doesn't breathe as much as the first film, which has a little bit of, you know, a little bit of looseness to it. And I found that way I liked, you know, Guardians 3 in that sense has that looseness. It's not a hurried goodbye. It's very relaxed goodbye. It gives a lot of time for us to just spend with characters that we, at least I am very fond of all the characters, and it gives time to kind of be with them and their personalities in a way that isn't really pushing the plot. It's just a nice kind of soft landing, as it were. And I did like that about this. I don't think the story or the plot itself was too very important in this. It didn't have like huge implications for the Marvel universe or whatever, quote unquote. It's just this kind of specific story, and I think another review mentioned this. I think it may have been Gail's review that, you know, she liked that it was particularly that they had gone to save their friend. So it's not like, you know, they're out to save the world, they're out to save their friend, which is a very Guardians thing to do, as in they don't care really what's happening to civilizations and stuff like that. They'd just rather, you know, they'd just rather see that, you know, their friends and their family and all are fine. And I mean, I'm sure they care what's happening to civilizations and stuff. But, you know, for them, family is everything. And I think, you know, the idea that they're out, the whole plot of the film can be boiled down to the Guardians go out to, you know, save Rocket, is a nice reminder of what the series has always been.
Yeah, that's pretty much been it, right? Like it's just the smallness, that sort of the bigness is almost incidental, because that entire save the universe and defeat and sort of like you know, nullify High Evolutionary and his master plan and all comes almost as a footnote. And of course that's a very Marvel climax, and there's a lot of explosions and a lot of set pieces happening towards the end, but that it comes out of something as fundamental as wanting to save a friend is as you said, you know, it's a good little reminder of what this franchise stands for. I've been curious, since there are so many and since it's sort of mushroomed into this nice little colony of misfits, who your favorite character has been over these, at least by the end of these three films?
I think it's probably Drax. He cracks me up, and I think Bautista's performance has acquired a kind of gentleness by this by this film. It's almost like, you know, earlier he'd be shouting a lot in the first film and the second film, and now he doesn't even have to say anything loudly, I think, because we've established him, and he just has this, he just sort of murmurs his lines now, and it's still hilarious, and it just really works. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I mean, Drax is he's the crowd pleaser, and even I've enjoyed, but I was fairly cynical about, like, anyways, wrestlers becoming stars in Hollywood over the years. But yeah, Bautista, it's really changed the way we perceived him also as sort of a on-screen performer. And I've seen him in a couple of other films, even Manoj Naik Shyamalan's latest film.
I haven't seen that one. Did you manage to catch that?
Yeah, I watched that. I wrote about it as well. A very interesting film. That's another story. But Batista's role is very much shaped from the way we perceive him as Drax also. Like, it's a nice thing that filmmakers are looking at him in a certain way with that very giant tenderness, and that sort of really informs the kind of characters he plays, because he can't help his bulkiness and the way he looks. So obviously his nature is going to be almost a contrast to how his body looks, and that's been happening a couple of times. I think he was in the latest what was that film, the spy, the detective one, the Netflix detective film.
I'm escaping you.
He's been in, I've been seeing him quite a bit in the last couple of years. So his Drax is obviously the almost the origin story of him as a performer, and it's really I really get amused when I see him on screen.
Knives Out,
Knives Out film, he was there in that as well, and of course he was there in the previous. I'm very much on board the Batista train, but I'm most impressed, I think, by not just as a character but as a performer. I think Karen Gillan as Nebula is really sort of,
it's fantastic.
Yeah. Like, he's just the core of, first of all, she's the sort of core of this film in many ways. And if you want to go on a very primal way of measuring performances in superhero films as, okay, you know how the actress or the actor looks and sounds, and the character they play, how they look and sound. And Karen Gillan has absolutely melted into this role as Nebula and become and made. And it's a very complicated character. The arc that Nebula has had from sort of bad to gray to good over the Marvel franchise, over the MCU films. I feel like she's done a fantastic job, and it all comes to a head in this film as well, where she's more or less replacing Gamora in the group, but also being a very hard-nosed sort of version of that.
Yeah, I liked the, which is why maybe the I wasn't as receptive to the, I mean, as moved maybe by the Rocket backstory as I might turn out to be when I think more about the film later. But initially, like, I was the Gamora and Nebula backstory with Thanos, where he kind of engineers Nebula as this sort of almost his weapon, I thought that was so moving, and I thought that was done so well that another one of these kind of engineered from birth kind of thing was, for me, I thought it was a bit of a repeat in that sense. Obviously different circumstances and stuff like that, but I really liked that subplot that was happening in the earlier movies with Nebula. And Karen Gillan, of course, like, really, really good in that role. And and she's a slightly, I mean, she's, Nebula is of course never happy with anything, but at least she's not like actively traumatized and angry in this film. So it's nice to see how she gets a few funny lines, and she's really good in this.
Yeah. Is there anything specific you'd like to talk about other than?
No, but I don't know. I somehow doubt that they're really going to take the Guardians forward. I think they always like to leave that door open. But I mean, what do I know? Or care, really. But I think that this seems like a natural end to that sub-franchise, and they may not be like bringing back the team. I don't know. I feel like a bit of my investment in the Marvel films has also kind of now died with this, because I really did enjoy them popping up not only in their own films, but, you know, in the you know, in the Avengers films when they turn up. I used to look forward to that bit. And I don't know, it was, I think now it's just for me personally, I think that takes me a little further away from, you know, what Marvel's planning to do, like whatever it will come up with next.
Is that emotion I detect in your voice that you are going to miss fictional characters, Marvel's characters?
No, not at all. I'm happy to be trying to put some distance between Marvel and myself, and you know, those efforts will continue in the coming years. What about you? Yeah. You're not particularly wrapped up in what they're up to.
No, I don't really care. Like, I mean, this was actually, as I said, this was the only franchise I wouldn't say invested in. I it's not like I couldn't wait for the next film. I didn't even know it was releasing till like 3 days before. But it's something that I consistently sort of enjoyed and did not mind over a period of time. Even the cameos, as you said, in other films, it always felt like they were misfits even there, which was fun. But yeah, I mean, it got me fairly emotional. Not because I won't see them again, but because of the way they went, like in a very organic sort of way. And it's not like they were forced to say goodbye. It's just that they know when to stop while they're ahead, which is a good thing. And that's something I think a bunch of other franchises should be learning. But yeah, I mean, I will... It's not like I watch a lot of the other Marvel shows or films. So my investment was anyways like rock bottom. So it's going to be less than rock bottom after this. Unless Black Panther keeps coming up with films, which I'm ready to watch. I don't mind the Thor franchise as well. I watched the last one last year, Love and Thunder. But again, you know, it's very much connected to the main... to the main Avengers and to the MCU universe, MCU. So I'm just, it's fine for entertainment. This was the only one I really cared for, and I didn't really realize it until I was watching them in the three films. So yeah, so I'm a little sad that they're gone, but you know, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and it might just not, I'm not going to like really, grieve that they are gone. So it's a, in that sense, I'm very much a Nebula character in this sense. I'm not going to feel terrible about it, but yeah, it was nice while it lasted, and I will miss Chris Pratt especially because I wasn't totally a big fan of him before this Guardians of the Galaxy. I was always like, he's a bit like Ryan Reynolds, but not like Ryan Reynolds. So I guess this has sort of changed my feelings towards him. But yeah, I'm not going to watch the next few films of the MCU for sure. Yeah, that's there's nothing else. I'm presuming. I guess that's about it. And yes, I think yeah, I'm willing to say that was our first Marvel's podcast. I don't know. I'm pretty sure we haven't done a film before.
No, we did Black Panther. We did the second Black Panther. Panther.
Yeah, of course we did Black Panther. Yeah, okay. So the second one. Second. Yeah, so I, yeah. So whenever the next Black Panther comes, I'll be ready to do another one. till then, I'm going to be staying very happily away from MCU. So yeah, that was it for us this week. That was Afwa and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Do try to watch these films. Write into us if you have any feelings about it. If you want to add to the discourse, at rahulnoles@gmail.com and bhatia.ud@gmail.com. Thanks for listening as usual. And we will be back soon. Bunch of releases this month as well. We'll try to be we'll try to be more regular, and otherwise we'll try to do podcasts that are not just related to the films that are releasing. So see you next time, and thanks for listening.